Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 17th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Pretty exciting November 9, almost an incredible November 9.
Yeah, we got to November 9 now. Absolutely. And I know you're still excited about November 9.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's my favorite thing.
No, it was kind of fun. You know, I obviously wasn't out there this year. I was out there for our NEF Tour event, but you know, it's fun, kind of fun to see how many people go down just to watch it as it goes down. I mean, we had 6,400 people, right? And then when you combine the day twos, now you're down to 3,000 or whatever. And then, you know, every morning I wake up and see, hey, now we're down to 200 people. Now we're down to 45, 27. And finally this morning, woke up and we're down to 9.
Right.
But so these players are coming back on November 8th and include a chip leader, Joe McKeon from Pennsylvania. Only one bracelet winner, Max Steinberg, on the 9. Players coming from the United States, Israel, Belgium, and Italy. So once again, kind of a melting pot final table. And two players this year, and I love this. I want to talk about this for a little bit. 61 or older, including 72-year-old Pierre Nouvel of Belgium, who was the oldest November 9er in history. Previously, it was Stephen Guy, who was 57.
Man, he blows that record out.
Yeah, exactly. And then not making the final table, but getting oh so close, Daniel Negreanu, who bowed out 11th.
Man, I heard when he got knocked out, it was brutal, and he went down and all on his knees and buried his face in his hand. And he's been so close, and he's never actually made it. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the best finish he's had in the main event. Certainly, he's got a very storied career elsewhere, so it's not that bad. But yeah, it did sound like it was a slight suck out, if nothing else. And chip leader, too, Joe McKeon.
Yep.
But yeah, we've been talking about for years now, ever since November 9 started, it's a young man's game, right?
Yeah.
22, 23, 24. And certainly, they're, you know, half the field is 24 or 26 this year as well, too. So it's not that it's, Americans are foreign wars, final table here. But if you're asking me who I'm rooting for one of the guys from our generation. Actually, I guess they're not really our generation, but
the guys who could be our parents.
I'm closer to that generation than I am to the 24-year-old.
Yeah, that's, could you imagine a 72-year-old winning it? I mean, that'd be unbelievably great.
I mean, one of the things that people always talk about, and I saw a lot of it again this year, you know, people rooting for a woman to win this thing, right?
Yeah.
And they got down to one. I think she finished 25th or 29th, something like that, the last woman standing this year. You know, so many people are just like, you know, I'd love to see a woman win it, right? Because of what it's going to do for hopefully to get more women to play. And interesting statistic, too, I saw this year, 94% of entries were men this year.
Yeah.
Isn't that, that's just sad.
It's just almost,
shocking,
yeah,
right?
It's always that way. It's always between 5 and 10%, usually 5.
It's just ridiculous, I think, you know. So obviously that would have been a big boon for getting women to play. But I actually think that this, one of these older guys, or I should say experienced players, if they win, I don't think it's going to drive a bunch of the older generation to pick up the game now, but I think it'd be kind of cool. If nothing else, it's like, hey, yeah, you whippersnappers, those old guys can still play. We got games, though.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of shatters the, you know, hey, after 50, your cognitive skills deteriorate, and you're not able to play for longer periods of time kind of stereotyping. I mean, yeah, it's scientifically true that, you know, the older you are, the more difficult it is for you to focus generally, and it is difficult for you at 61 or 72 to be able to withstand 2 weeks of this unbelievably long, enduring, you know, race to the end. Sure. That's a long time to sit in that cold, you know, Amazon room.
Oh, absolutely.
Or whatever, and to keep focus for that long.
Got rained on this year, too.
And they got rained on. I mean, it's crazy. And you know those guys had their galoshes when it started raining. But, that would be an incredible story. And that's what you hope for whenever you get, you know, as when you're supposed to be a journalist, as a journalist, you're not biased. You're just hoping for a good story to write about, but you're not pushing for anyone in particular. You're not, in this case, though, that would be the best story to me, is a 72-year-old or a 61-year-old winning. That'd be incredible.
Well, and the other thing, too, I think would be interesting, and, you know, age does not equate to class, so I'm not suggesting that.
Right.
But I would say, generally speaking, a lot of these younger players have a different attitude towards winning in a game and how they act after they win.
Right.
That I think that these older players would have. So I'm actually kind of interested to see, you know, our first older champion in quite a while. I mean, I don't know how far back you have to go back to find a champion that was in their 60s.
Yeah, I don't even know. Jeez. I can't recall any.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that would be interesting to see how, you know, because we have this debate every year. I mean, what do we expect of the main event champion? You know, some people expect a ton, expect them to be a huge proponent for the game and ambassador of the game, and I'm one of those. And then other people are like, you know, they don't owe us anything. They can go out and spend that money or do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But I think that would be a very interesting ambassador, somebody that's, you know, has clocked some time on this earth and seen a lot of things and experienced a lot of things rather than just playing poker for their first 24 years.
You know, and clearly this guy travels. You know, except, I keep using Pierre as the example.
He's
the oldest, and he's from Belgium. So he came all the way to the United States, flew whatever that had to be, 12 hours or whatever, and came here to play it. So he's going to be someone that could represent the game well. It's not like he's going to be someone who's, all right, I'm 72, I'm going back into retirement and swinging on the swing in the backyard. I mean, this is a guy who clearly still plays.
I got a shuffleboard match to get to.
That's right. You know, so he still could do it. I don't know if he would do it with such, you know, zeal as a younger, you know, person would. But
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Anybody named Pierre is a cool cat, I think. I've never met somebody in my life named Pierre that isn't just the coolest person in the room. So I don't know what it is about that name. But the other gentleman, the 61-year-old, I believe his name is Stan, he is an American. And I think his biggest cash so far has been $38,000 before this.
Wow.
Of course, he's guaranteed $1 million right now. So certainly, I would like to think that if he wins, that's a humble champion there, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know this Joe McKeon guy, I mean, massive chip lead.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to beat, but it really only takes a couple. And when it gets that high and the blinds and everything, it only takes one double up, really, to get the guy in second, even with you. And then, so when you look at it and it's like, oh, it looks like it's insurmountable, but it's really not.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, Jerry Yang proved that. Huh?
Yeah.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, a couple other stats from the World Series this year. More than 103,000 total entries this year, which is the most ever, and up 25% from last year. Of course, I think Colossus had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But you know, numbers are numbers, right?
Yeah.
Third most prize money ever awarded. And, of course, the two top years had the $1 million one-drop events in there, so it's a little unfair to compare those two. And players from 111 countries.
Man.
You know, sometimes, you know, again, not that we're just Americans, but it's kind of staggering to think that we even have 111 countries.
Yeah,
in the world, right?
I always think that when you look at, like, a globe, you're like, they're like maybe 30 on here. You know? Well, 111, it's just, it's remarkable.
And actually, there is some dispute over how many countries there are, because I actually had a good discussion with, you know, our cruise dealer, Robert Ryder, travels the world, and he's actually been to more than 100 countries.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing, I think, and a great goal. But we actually said, so I actually even said that when he said that to me. I'm like, wow, I don't even know how many countries there are. And I think it's somewhere between 280 and something. But it depends on who you talk to. And one of the sources was FIFA, the soccer federation. It's actually a pretty good source, right?
I mean, one of the things that always, when I was growing up, and you learn in whatever. They say, okay, North America, Canada, Mexico, United States. That's all you know. But there's 23 countries in North America alone.
Right, yeah.
And you don't even think about it that way. It's like you think of North America as those three, but there's so many down in the Caribbean and stuff, in Central America. It's like remarkable that there's 23 alone in North America. But if there's only 23 in North America, it's like, holy cow, that's another, you know, that's only 10% of what's in the whole world or whatever. It's just, it's remarkable how many countries there are. And 111 of them play poker or came over here to play poker. It's crazy.
Yeah, and if everybody did every one of our annual poker cruises a year like I do, then you could get at least 10 countries knocked off.
That's right. That's right.
And speaking of that, this is our feel-good story this year for Annie Up. Annie Up cruise passenger William Wachter becomes the oldest player, 94 years young, to ever cash in the main event, finishing 524th. And if you tell somebody you finished 524th in a tournament, usually it's like, wow, did you even try? But this is out of 6,400 people.
Yep.
Biggest tournament in the world. And 94.
Remarkable.
I'm like I said, I said this a ton of times. I'm just ecstatic to be walking this earth at age 74, let alone playing poker 20 years later and cashing in the biggest tournament in the world. That's just a phenomenal feat.
It's just unbelievable.
And, you know, I posted a picture of him on, the World Series sent us a picture, and posted it on her Facebook page, and he was wearing a shirt that said, "I didn't come here to lose." Isn't that great?
That is great.
He just had his face, was like, you know, this is mine, man.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations to him. He was part of the Team Fabbies that won our team tournament.
Yeah, I remember interviewing him. I played a lot with him in the cash games, and he was tough. He was a tough player. You know, he came in his scooter, and we interviewed him for the magazine because they won the cover.
Yeah.
And he was just a great guy.
All right, well, some other exciting news we get to announce. The second phase of Annie Up's MPD, Most Popular Dealer Contest, is over, and we have five finalists who are moving on to the final vote, which will take place August 1st through the 31st. Our finalists are from the Midwest region, Leslie Mesmer of Horseshoe Cleveland Casino. From the Northeast region, Emily Clemens of Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. From the South region, Brittany Thomas of Best Bet Jacksonville. From the West region, Barbara Jones of Aria. And from the Traveling Dealers section, Miranda Miller. And if you voted and were chosen to win one of the more than 400 prizes from our sponsors, you'll be getting an email from us shortly, so check your inbox or spam box or that alternative email address that you use when you enter contest.
And what stands out about these five finalists?
They all seem to have the same chromosomes.
It's amazing. I mean, unless, yeah. I mean, I don't know these people. I haven't seen their faces yet. So Leslie could be a guy. It's possible, I guess. But I don't,
that's actually true. I didn't think about that.
Right, but other than that,
it's like the same thing you were. Yep, yep.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it's five women, and very proud. Good deal.
Absolutely. So look forward to that new. We'll announce that new vote when it's up.
But then there's something else about dealers here we got to talk about, which is pretty funny.
Always elections. Elections all the time, right?
you go ahead, you talk about this, because you're like the political guy.
Well, I found this story, and I absolutely loved it. Because, it came up in my poker search, and I'm like, what's this coming up in my poker search for?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm really into the presidential campaigns and stuff, so I'll go ahead and read it. I mean, worst case scenario, I'm going to like it. For some other reason, but I got to find out why there's a poker thing.
Yeah.
Very last paragraph is where the poker comes into this. But, but essentially, if you don't like any of the Republicans or Democrats running for president next year, and according to Facebook, nobody likes anybody, no need to worry because there are already more than 400 other people running for president in 2016, including a cat. And it's not one of mine, by the way, yet. And if you're looking for someone who understands poker, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, you could probably do worse than W. Knox Richardson of the Hell of a Party.
Hell of a Party.
He says he's the only presidential hopeful who is a working poker dealer.
Oh, man. There's your MPD right there, man.
That's actually the first thing I thought of. I'm like, this poor guy was spending so much time running for president, didn't even know he could be the most popular dealer in Annie Up.
I know. What is he thinking?
He didn't even have to pay a filing fee to run in our contest.
That is huge.
But a phenomenal story. It's written by the Miami Herald, so you can Google it. You'll find it. Very funny to see that this cat is running for president, and then these other folks, too. But definitely, folks, if you're interested in the story, Google it, find it. the picture of W. Knox Richardson and his vice presidential nominee is worth the time Googling. They claim it's a strategy session. They're both sitting on lawn chairs outside asleep.
Oh, man. Unbelievable.
So it turns out it's super easy to run for president, Chris. So,
yeah, I think.
I mean, I don't know if we want to get more political than people already think we are, but, you know, we could just fill out some paperwork and boom.
I'll gladly be your VP.
You're part of the Ante Up party.
Yeah, I don't want the headaches. I'll be...
you don't want the bullet.
I'll be the Joe Biden to your Barack Obama any day. All right, Ante Up dates. The Ante Up World Championship will be July 27th to August 10th at Thunder Valley Casino Resort, just north of Sacramento, California. The schedule features 20 events in a number of disciplines, culminating with the $1,650 main event, the winner of which will appear on the cover of Ante Up, of course. And all the information can be found at anteupmagazine.com/world championship. And then for those of you who signed up last week's cruise free roll tournament on cardplayerclub.com, it was unfortunately postponed. The site had problems getting players to complete the registration process, so they decided it's going to postpone it until they can get everybody properly registered, and then we'll announce the new date when we get it.
Yeah, that was a little too bad, and I feel bad because, you know, we started a company once, right? And you try to do everything right, and then you get into a situation, and you got to make a tough decision to postpone this tournament and try to get everybody in that tried to register, or do you run it with the folks that actually,
right,
you know, completed the registration and they decided to wait a little bit? So, you know, I had a lot of conversations with them, and I know they're eager to get this back and going again. And I'll just encourage all of our listeners that sign up for it to follow all the instructions so you're properly registered next time and get a chance to win one of these cruises. Yeah. And I should also mention, please go to anteupcruises.com. That's where we'll put more information on this tournament when it's posted, but also more information on all of our cruises on there. And we're getting low on staterooms for our Tampa cruise coming up November 7th. So if you're looking to join us on that, give Chris's wife Jeannie a call soon before we run out of staterooms.
Yeah, that's true. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. Comes from Adam Burgoyne, and he says, "What is the best way to get back into poker after you've taken some time off? Should I just bring a couple of hundred to a casino and jump into a 1-2 game? Should I take it slow and play a couple of home games?" I'm the one that takes the time off more than you, I think, so maybe I should answer what I would do.
Yeah, there you go.
If I had the option to play in a home game first, I would. I would always play in a home game because, you know, I love playing with my friends, and it's a nice, relaxed atmosphere, but then I can also be focused and serious while I'm doing it and get the rhythm back and get the ideas back. And,
right, yeah.
And if I could do that, I always would. If not, then, yeah, maybe go to a little casino and playing the smallest game that you're comfortable with. You know, the biggest game you're comfortable with, the smallest game that you're comfortable with, too. It's kind of a weird way to say that, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would say any way you can... to me, I think it's getting back into the rhythm is the most important.
Yeah, getting reps.
It's kind of like a bicycle. You know, you never forget how to ride it, right? But with poker, I think you might forget where the gears are. So, you know, if you could do it in a place that's not going to hurt you as much. So, you know, these free poker leagues are a great place to do it. As you said, home games. Generally, home games are you're putting less money on the table. So I would do that just to get back into the flow and then just remember, because stuff's going to come back to you, but you'd rather it come back to you when it only costs you $20 or nothing than when it costs you a $200 pot at a casino. So, yeah, I definitely think a little risk place until you feel confident again.
You know, sometimes reading too helps. I mean, if it starts to trigger some of the things that, you know, some of the tenets that you would hang on to or what axioms, whatever. And those are the types of things that start to spark your memory of how it was to play or what it's like to play or something. You know, they say sometimes a smell can bring you right back to a moment in time or whatever. You smell something that reminds you of a childhood memory or cut grass or something. Same thing with reading. I mean, you can literally just pick up, say, Super System or something and say, "Oh, I remember that. I remember when I had a hand like that." And then all of a sudden it just puts you right back in that frame of mind before you go play too. So, you know, there's some things, but generally I think the home game is the best way to do it.
Yeah, there's also a lot of free online sites too that, you know, you're not going to play great poker at all, but at least it gets you back into the thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you do if you're actually playing real people that actually cared? You know, there's really nothing to risk there other than fake ships that you have to wait till the next morning to replenish.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home to the Antiup group discussions. Comes from our good friend Nicky M. He says, a friend was in a cash game in Las Vegas, had pocket jacks, raised preflop, and got one caller. The flop contained the jack, and he bet and was called. The turn was the fourth jack. He bet and was called again. The river is placed on the board, but it's upside down. The river card and the one after it in the deck had been face up in the deck. The four declares the hand dead. All betting was unwound. What was the proper ruling?
Yeah, this is interesting. I did not expect Elliot to rule the way he did, and then I had a conversation with him afterwards. So this is going to be a good discussion for us, I think.
Okay.
But here's what Elliot said. He says, many public card rooms will go to great lengths to prevent a missed deal after action has proceeded. In this case, more than one box card was found in the deck. An obscure rule reads, quote, after the initial deal is completed, a missed deal will only be declared in the event a, quote, foul deck is found. Once action has occurred, a missed deal cannot be declared, unquote. A foul deck is considered to have too many or too few cards, or two or more of the same card by rank and suit, or to have found to have cards from a different colored deck. Additionally, it is accepted that multiple box cards found before the action starts constitutes a case for missed deal. Two box cards found after the action has progressed significantly became quite the hornet's nest. While not universal, a good many casinos will unravel the action in this situation. This is because when box cards are consecutive, it is very reasonable that these specific cards were an individual player's hand that was dealt during the previous use of that deck. And he says, I'm assuming shuffle machine usage here. Furthermore, it's entirely plausible that one or more players noticed that the dealer never corrected the state of these cards before shuffling or placing them in the shuffle machine. To allow players to act on their hands with information not readily available to all other players is something that no casino would want to incur, to occur or to be known to allow. How does the casino or the players know if any players folded due to this piece of information and prevented your friend or other players in identical situations from getting additional action? While it sucks for your friend with the jacks, declaring an invalid deal is the right call.
Wow. I know it, though. It makes sense. You know, you have to do everything to extreme to find the truth there. And it's true, because any situation that you can dream up in there, you know, could possibly happen. And if those could possibly happen and change the outcome in any way because of this, and it's one of the reasons why it would be a foul deck, then it's true, I guess. It's a good ruling. It just seems like, you know, hey, we both got here at this way, and we should be able to continue our hand the way we're playing it, and whatever. But no, I think he's probably got it right here.
Well, he does make some good points, and I guess what I asked him, when I first read this, I always like to try to respond to our listeners with what I think, but mm-hmm. I always tell them, hey, we're passing on to Ellie, and he's a professional, so don't really listen to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just always, from the time I've been playing, you know, you treat a box card like it doesn't exist, like it's a napkin in the deck, so you just move on. And Ellie says that's right, but as he pointed out here, you know, when you have two consecutive ones, now it's a little fishier.
Yeah.
Now it's just not an accidental card that got flipped over or something like that. Now there is, as he said, possibility that there were, you know, a hand or something like that, and people saw it. So that changes it. So I guess I get that. I mean, it certainly would not make me feel any better if I'm sitting there with quad jacks and I watch them return all my bets to me and to other folks. But kind of the other thing, too, and Ellie's kind of trying to think of this. I mean, this is important to him, and I think it's important to other casinos, and too, it's probably important for our listeners to understand, too. Obviously, you're trying to run the fairest game for your players. You know, no one ever wants to have a casino known for not being fair to its players or making a ruling that seemed weird, right? And part of the reason, above just being good people, is that all casinos are governed in some form or fashion by a gaming commission, you know, whether it's the state or tribal. And, you know, in these cases, you get to look at, you know, as he said, most gaming commissions, if not all, are never going to flag the casino for doing what they think is the right thing for the integrity of the game.
Yeah.
And here, as Elliot says, you know, hey, we don't know where these cards were. We don't know whether people saw them or not. So it actually would be we'd have less integrity in the game by letting this hand continue than if we got rid of it.
Do you think, this is from out of left field, but do you think it'd be weird to offer a democratic solution to things like this?
Well, I do think, and I think Sam in the past has mentioned this too, and some of our other call to floors, you know, this is a technical ruling by Elliot here, right?
Right.
And there's nothing to say that a room would say, hey, dude, you had four jacks, you're totally going to win this pot. I feel bad for you. And do something for them outside the pot. You know, hey, here's a dinner comp, or here's a hotel room for the night, or, you know, here's $100 free slot play, or whatever, something like that, or, you know, here's a hat, you know,
yeah.
Something just to acknowledge this is a raw deal, but it's the fair deal, and I understand that you don't think it's a fair deal, but we're at least trying to do something to help make it taste better in your mouth.
Yeah.
And I would imagine some room might even just give them the whole thing, you know, obviously back up the pot, but then also come over and, you know, give them, hey, you know, the pot was 200, here you go.
Now, if...
Because in that sense, too, there's also, I mean, you don't want to get involved in, you know, because obviously a player here could go to the gaming commission and say, hey, this is wrong, now you've got time wasted and things like that. It goes back to what Elliot says at that point, if you can demonstrate the gaming commission, hey, you know, I know this guy's upset, but this is for the best of the game, then it's going to ultimately come down in favor of the casino, but, you know, just like a lawsuit, you know, just because you're right doesn't mean you actually want to wage it.
Right. I mean, in a tournament scenario, everything that happens at this table affects the entire tournament.
But
in a cash game, I wondered if there's any casino that would ever consider doing something like, okay, well, it's involving two players, everybody else on the table, do you guys mind this hand continues before we...
Yeah, and the problem with that is someone says, yeah, we don't care, and then they change their mind and fire off a letter to, you know. Yeah, you're not going to walk around with a legal form from the null sign saying.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It just seems so.
So it gets back to what he's saying is that, you know, obviously if somebody saw something and didn't say it, this is not the time they're going to go, oh, yeah, I totally saw that, man. And I didn't say anything, but then I folded because I looked at my hand, I had pocket, you know, whatever. You know, no. If you're a cheat, you're not going to come out and say you're a cheat, right?
Right. All right. Yeah, definitely the right ruling. Just it stinks to have those jacks in that situation, and it figures it would happen with quads too. Not like, oh, I made a flush or a straight, but quads.
Right.
Just that sucks.
And getting action.
You know? And getting action, getting to the end with it. Ugh. Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move. There's some good news. We're going to refresh our memories here with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're in the same 2-5 casino cash game and sit with about 700. About 3 hours have passed since the last hand with that opponent, and he has definitely seen some ups and downs. He got his stack to 1,200 before losing a couple of heartbreakers and having to reload. He currently has 300. He also got a seat change to turn his luck around, and currently sits directly to our right. Other than this opponent, the rest of the table action hasn't changed much. It's still pretty timid. The blinds post, and it's folded around to our villain in the MP, who raises to 20. He's no longer playing as tight as he was previously, and has made some questionable raises lately. We're on the hijack with the 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs. We decide to make the call, with a fitter fold plan. The rest of the table folds, and my does the flop fit. The jack of diamonds, 10 of clubs, 7 of clubs comes down. We flopped the nuts with a redraw to a flush or a straight flush. We could not have asked for more than that. With about $40 in the pot, our opponent checks to us. A little suspect, but at this point, we don't really care. We put in a value bet of $20. Our opponent thinks for a while before carefully putting $20 into the pot. The turn is the five of clubs. So close. For a split second, I thought it was the six. Once again, our opponent checks. With $80 in the pot, we no longer have the nuts, but we're still in value bet mode. We make it $50 to go. Our opponent wastes little time in shoving his remaining $260 into the pot. Talk about an overbet. So, is he tilting? Does he have a better flush? Or is it something else entirely? What's the move?
I think this is gut check time here. It's entirely plausible our opponent had two big clubs, and it's entirely plausible he's making a move on us with the scary club. So for me, this is all about the read. I mean, without being there and seeing it, I could defend a call or a fold based on O'Malley's there.
Yeah.
Whatever he tells me his read is.
The only other thing I'll add to that, because I agree with you, I think I'm calling, but I'm going to go with my read, but I'm likely calling, is if he had the nuts, what's the point of shoving there?
Well, see, I think this is a good reverse psychology thing, right? Go back to our great show, The Friends. You know, they don't know that we know that we know.
Right? Yeah.
So at this point, you shove, and then people say, hey, well, if he's got the nuts, he's not going to shove, so I'm going to call. And then boom. Now you're like, huh?
Yeah, it just seems like you want to get the most. You don't want to take any. There are other increments that you can bet that you're going to get money out of somebody than shoving to me. I know what you're saying.
I'm not saying that that's the way I would play it. Right. I'm just saying I think there are people that would play it that way.
That would weigh in my decision.
So I never immediately discount the fact that someone has the nuts when they shove.
Yeah.
I think they're also thinking that people are like, you know, it's a real smart player. They're going to be, hey, if you got the nuts, he's going to want to string me along, so he can't have the nuts here. And, you know, it's just outfoxing your opponent. So.
Well, let's find out then.
Hello again. I'm not buying his story at all. He hasn't been playing great poker for a while now, and he seems to keep backing himself into a corner and making desperate moves to get out. Plus, his talk at the table has been nothing but sob stories since he started losing. I'm going to say at best he's got something like ace-jack or king-jack. Maybe he has a high club. Either way, we're good here. And if we're not, we have two outs to a straight flush. We call. Our opponent confidently turns over the jack of clubs, 10 of hearts. So he was stronger than we gave him credit for, but we're still about 75% to win the hand. We just need to fade a club that isn't a 6, or a jack or a 10. And we do. The 4 of hearts hits the river, and we take in a nice pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, pay attention to what's going on with the players around you. Had this been an opponent who was playing even-keeled all night, this would have been a much more difficult call. I hope to see you on the felt.
I always like when the good guys win one.
Yep, good call. There's really not much more to say about it either. I mean, that's, you know, it's a gut check call, and you make it, and you win, and that makes you feel good, you know.
Yeah, so I wonder if his opponent was doing what I mentioned, betting that scary club, knowing that he had some backup, you know, in case, you know, he was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he's got two pairs, so he could obviously improve, but... It did seem like, actually, I think that shove seemed more questionable than shoving with the nuts.
Well, I think he's protecting. I think he wonders if we're not as good. Yeah, it's top two. You know what I mean? I think he's thinking,
absolutely.
You know, hey, I'm protecting my hand here, and I don't want you to get to that easy flush, you know, four card flush on me or something, because I'm not going to make a flush. So,
but he can make that without shoving, right?
I agree. I agree.
Are, but you know, I mean, why put yourself to, you know, down to the felt to make that point?
Yeah.
That, you know, really all you're supposed to be doing in that situation, if you're trying to protect against the flush, is bet enough that he's making a bad call.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. I don't know. I don't know why he was thinking shove there, but sometimes guys do that. It's also an intimidation of it, too. You know, there's the, you know, holy cow, this guy bet everything he's got. He must love his hand, and do I want to risk it on
But that's not card? Getting value, then. Now you're trying to squeeze somebody out of the pot. You know, and I think that's an interesting debate we always have, too, is you're not trying to win pots, you're trying to win chips.
Yeah.
And you're not trying to win the hand by pushing people out. You're trying to get the most value out of the hand. And in some cases, you get the most value out of a hand is shoving everybody out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in a lot of cases, it's not. It's getting him to make a bad call with bad odds, and then if they do make that call, hope they don't hit.
Some people do it because they don't want to have to think about the river. You know what I mean? They do it because they're like,
Summed up No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why I don't like it. It's not a thinking game.
Yeah, so. You don't want to think about what you have to do on the river if that club does come, so you shove now and say, hey, you know, it takes it out of my hands, puts all the pressure on him, and some people are comfortable doing that. Some people aren't. That's why it's a difficult game. I mean, it's easy and it's hard. It's ridiculous.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. Comes from our favorite chef, Ken Allard.
Yes.
Saw him out at the AntiUp Poker Tour Gold Nugget. And a quick situation here, so we'll see
how
quick the response from us is on it.
Okay.
He says he posted this on the Facebook page in Massachusetts and sparked a huge debate. That's my Donald Trump impression. Huge, everything's huge. Saturday night, full room, about 40 tables, high hand promotion every 4 hours.
Okay.
I have little knowledge or reads on the players as I recently sat down and only have squiggly 2 hours to play before a concert. Hoping it's a hair metal, not Rush, but... I'm under the gun with $249 American dollars and raised to $15. The button, who has $180, calls. I'm sorry. The under the gun is the one that had $249, raised to $15. The button with $180 calls. And we are in the small blind with king of clubs, jack of clubs, and $300, and also make the call. Flop comes ace of clubs, king of spades, ten of clubs. We're first act and check. The under gun bets 25. The button shoves for 165. What's the move?
Yeah, I'm calling. I mean, I got Broadway, Royal Flush, pair. The draws. The draws. I got Royal Flush draw, Broadway draw, pair of kings. I got everything. I mean, I could still be behind, but how could I let it go? Plus, there's another guy there that might even call too. You're going to win a ton of money on this hand if you hit it. There's no way I'm letting it go, right?
No way?
No way I'm letting it go.
I'm not going to either, but I can see how somebody would decide not to, right?
Well, we have 180. I mean that's not a lot of money.
We have 300.
The second guy 180. I'm sorry. We have 300.
Well, 275.
All right. So, you know, we might have to go to the felt here, but, I mean, if you're not going to play this hand, what hand are you going to play?
There is a case to be made that it doesn't get too much better than this outside of a made hand.
You know, that's exactly it. And even we are even made a little. We have a pair of kings, too, you know, because somebody else be on a draw who shoved. You know, why'd they shove? They got the nuts. Why'd they shove? We just talked about this 10 minutes ago. I can't let this hand go. There's no way. I'm calling.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, then we'll talk a little bit more, too. He says, I tanked for a few minutes and then shoved myself under the gun called. So all three were in.
Yes.
Under the gun showed ace of spades, ace of hearts.
Wow.
Button showed the king of hearts, king of diamonds.
Wow. Case king came out too.
Turn and river were blanks.
Oh, brutal.
Ken says, looking forward to your choice.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I'm gonna go broke there.
All right. So here's my question now. So he says it sparked a huge debate, and I probably should have followed up with him on why it did. I did not, though. I told him I was shoving, so. But, you know, normally you and I kind of disagree a little bit, or we can play devil's advocate and try to figure out another side of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a tough time figuring out what the debate is here. The huge debate.
Yeah, huge debate. I mean, yeah, okay, so... All right, so if somebody shoved...
Aside from a results-oriented people that, you know, oh my God, you're up against two sets.
Yeah.
Which obviously you don't know then, and there's no way you could sit there and think that both are on top and middle set there.
Yeah, especially...
And even then, it doesn't really matter. The whole reason you're calling is to hit one of your other cards.
Right. Yeah, there's no... We didn't think that our kings were good.
Right, exactly.
But they could have been. They still could have been good. You don't know. Or they could have had you could have had more outs than you thought too. On top of it, it could have been something weird. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. I can't get away from that hand. I don't know what would possess me to fold, knowing that I even have another guy behind me who might call and even increase my pot odds. you know, I don't even know what I would do to get it. You have a Royal Flush draw, you have a Broadway draw, you have a pair. I just don't know what I would do. What if I fold that hand, how could I forgive myself?
And I'll tell you the other two factors that make it really tough to spark a huge debate, I think, here are high hand promotion every 4 hours.
Right.
Now, obviously, I'm not going to risk $300 to win whatever that high hand promotion is, but that's a little insurance policy, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've got a great chance of, if we hit the right card here, of qualifying. I mean, if we hit the Royal, I mean, it's hard to lose a high hand to a Royal, right?
Right.
And then the other thing, too, is the squiggly 2 hours to play before a concert.
Right.
You know, normally, I mean, when you sit down and you have nowhere to be and you're going to grind out for 4, 6, 8, 10 hours, right? Then you, at that point, you could pick and choose your battles. Now I got 2 hours to play, and I'm playing No Limit. I'm looking for stacks, and I'm looking for spots, and this is a good, pretty good spot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I see... The only downfall is that we lose our stack, but you can lose your stack on anything that you shove in on.
But here's the thing: we're sitting down for 2 hours, so we're really playing for enjoyment at this point, right?
Right.
I mean, no one sits down when you only have less than 2 hours if they're serious about winning. Now, I'm not saying you're willy nilly just throwing chips around, but it's a different frame of mind here than if I got up in the morning and I'm like, you know what, today I'm just gonna go play cards, get to the poker room, have a nice meal, sit down at noon, and plan to play until midnight.
Right.
That's a different story. I mean, when I'm sitting down, oh, I got a couple hours to kill. I'm, in a lot of ways, it's like a slot machine. I'm looking to, you know, I'll throw $20 in while I'm waiting and hope I hit the jackpot.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hand to do it with. You're going to triple up, well, not triple up, but you're going to come close to tripling up. You could conceivably hit that one outer for the high hand, and you're not going to get a better spot. I mean, it really... The only thing that makes it better is if you have a complete made hand, like a straight or a flush already. You know, but that, I can't let that
hand go. At that
point,
then you're probably not getting the action that you're getting.
Yeah, I can't let that hand go.
Now, I will ask you. I see where this is full room, so I assume we're at a full table, too, right? Mm-hmm. So, under the gun raises a 15, and this is I didn't say what we're playing. 1-2, 1-3. I assume it's one of those, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's 2-5. Let's assume it's 1-2 or 1-3. So under the gun raises 15. We get a button call, and we've got King Jack in the small blind. Do you make that call?
You know, when you first said that, I thought about the first hand I ever played in my life at Foxwoods, in my entire life, first hand ever cash game. I sit down. It's the first hand dealt to me, and I was actually in a blind, which is why I got to be dealt in, something like that. But I was in a blind. I get King Jack of clubs. It was the weirdest thing. As soon as you read it to me, that's what I remembered. And I remember when I left that day thinking, I should have folded that King Jack of clubs because I played it. Guy had Ace King. King came on the flop. I lost half my stack on the first hand. And I thought, man, I should have just folded King Jack. It's not that good of a hand. I'm out of position the whole way, this guy. Why did I play it? So at first I thought that. But now I'm a little different player now, and I still think of the King Jack. We talked about this last week, I think, that Daniel Negreanu, you know, calls it the rookie hand because you think it's good, but it's terrible. And he's out of position the whole way with this King Jack. Yeah, it's suited. So there is a case for saying, you know, I'm just going to get out of the way with this. But then there's that 2 hour window where you're like, I only got 2 hours. I want to play this hand, you know. And, you know, Ken's been around, so he knows how to get away from traps and stuff. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure he wouldn't have been married to that hand unless something like this happens, and it just happened to happen. And I can't fault him for calling. There's just no way.
No, I'm not faulting. I'm just wondering whether maybe that's what sparked the huge debate.
Yeah, that could be it.
You know, I'm sure he would have said that. You know, hey, everybody was crazy. Why did you call him a small blind with King Clubs, Jack Clubs? But he didn't say that. So, yeah, you know, I think that's one of those hands that I would play there if I'm playing for a couple hours and just splashing around. Yeah, but otherwise, I'm not happy with that hand in the small blind with an under gun raiser at a full table.
Yeah, and especially with the high
and
hand.
And a button
there.
Caller, too.
Yeah. High hand over your head, and you got two high hand cards in your hand. You got Royal Flush cards. You're like, oh, I'll just take a flyer for $15. I got 300 in front of me. I got 2 hours to play. You call. But yeah, if I'm in a tournament and that's King Jack, especially if it's not suited, in this case it is, but if it wasn't, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to get out of the way here. Or if I call, I'm going to be like, I got to hit top two or a set here, you know, trips to dignify going further. And in this case, I mean, just bad timing, but there's just no way I'm going to... Once I'm in with his hand. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Ken, I'm not sure what the big debate is, but...
Me neither.
You did what we did, and I'm glad I didn't have any money on you.
Well, you know, at least you got the main hand of the week, so...
Yeah, I hope you enjoy the concert,
makes you feel a little better, yeah.
All right, we have to close the show this week with some sad news, and we'd like to dedicate it to the memory of Big Dave Koenig, one of our longtime fans of the show, who passed away after an auto accident this week. And, Chris, I know you knew him a lot better than I did, so...
Yeah. You know, one of the things about Dave was that he was the type of person that he was all about promoting poker and making poker players' lives better. You know, he was a big proponent of a lot of Kenna James's success in the early going, and a lot of our friends, Blind Squirrel. He was a great person for the game. He loved to just promote the game. He was one of the reasons why we believed that we could not only do well with the show and the magazine, and he'd help us any way he could, but you know, that we could actually get these people on the show. He was the one who got Kenna on the show for us.
Right.
He was the reason. And yes, I stayed at his home more than once in Las Vegas. I used to talk to him two or three times a week because we ended up being friends for a while. We faded in the end there. I hadn't talked to him in a little while, and I was just, and that's this is the thing I want to leave everybody with. You know, life is short, man. If you're thinking about somebody and you want to talk to them, do it.
Yeah.
Because a couple of times in the last 3 weeks to a month, I was actually thinking about him and saying, God, we haven't talked in a while. And it's because, you know, the magazine gets busy and he's out there and he knows that and he's busy with his, you know, with his work and his wife. And I feel so bad for his wife, Chris. She's the sweetest lady and always bent over backwards to make my time out there better. And I feel absolutely terrible. And he was younger than me and just a great guy and great for the game. Funny as can be. He won a banana. It was the most exciting thing of his life.
Yeah.
You know, for those of you who don't really remember, we had the Apes tournaments, and when you won, you got a plastic banana from us. It was kitschy and everything, but he played so hard. He even did a bumper for our show, and he couldn't believe it. He won a banana, and it was like the greatest thing that ever happened to him, you know. And he was just a great guy. And if I can leave anybody with anything, just, hey, if there's somebody in your life that you haven't talked to, and you know what, go talk to him. Because I wanted to talk to him, and now I can't. So
yeah.
We'll miss him.
The one thing I was thinking about him this morning on my morning walk, and one of the things that came right to me was, here's a guy that did so much for us, you know. But, yeah, as you mentioned, brought us Kenna James. He put you up in Vegas a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, did all this stuff for us and never asked us for a single thing.
Right.
Not even a patch to wear, let alone a t-shirt or anything.
Right.
And those people are the really special people in the world that do things just because they love it, or they love a show, or they love people and not looking for anything. And, you know, so that makes you sad that somebody like that is gone. And definitely am sad about it. But it also made me realize and think about all the people, other fans of this show that have done so much for us and never asked for anything either, and that they're still around and making this world a better place. So
yeah,
that's what kind of helped cheer me up a little bit this morning.
Yeah, and you know, we found out too he was an organ donor, so he's going to be still giving.
That's true.
You know, without asking, and you know, just a great loss for us at NEO. I'm Chris Cosenza,
and I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Piggy, diggy, biggy, can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me.
Hi, guys. It's Dave from Ohio, your number eight champion. And you're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet, Ante Up with Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
I put holes in...